For June the 30th, 2017, we talk about the SNES Classic Edition, Clandestine, and we ask you about your favorite character customization in games. Also, because next week is a holiday, we will not be back for that, but we will be back the week after. Welcome to level 202. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Dennis.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Woo. Yeah. Been a little bit. You were on vacation with your family.
I was.
Yeah.
It was a good time with both my immediate family and the extended side of my family. So like
nice.
Mothers, brothers, sisters.
Yeah.
And how many people total?
I think 14 people in a house, including kids. And only one real argument the entire week.
Oh, that's a miracle.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was when everyone was heavily intoxicated and it broke up. It was about as good as you can expect it to go.
Yeah, that's just cost of doing business. Yeah.
Exactly. Stupid drunk argument.
Yeah,
but no, I mean it was a wonderful time. We were in Michigan, Upper Peninsula, which is beautiful, and has a ton of not just breweries but distilleries and wineries and cideries, there is nature as well. Although the four things that I mentioned first are more than enough to keep you busy.
Lots of ease and then nature. That's what I just heard.
Yes.
They're all intoxicating.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, I mean, there are some who would. But I missed you guys. It's good to be back and actually talking to people.
Yeah, no, I'm jealous. That sounds great. I do not begrudge you being away whatsoever.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but it's nice having you back. Yeah, it's a beautiful beautiful part of the country. I would love to spend some time up there.
Don't worry, episode 200 was full of E3 meh, so you didn't really miss anything.
Just really scheduled the entire vacation to dodge that bullet.
Yeah. No, you were just able to catch all of the good bits after they filtered to the top. Yeah,
that's right.
what
was swimming in it?
Was there anything from that was that actually sounds kind of cool?
Man, you're gonna make me scramble back through.
If nothing right jumps to mind, that is also data. So
yeah, no, I mean that's honestly the way it was. No, nothing pops to mind. What'll happen is as stuff comes to mind, I'll just randomly blurt it out during the episode.
I wish because
there
wouldn't.
Was stuff that I saw and was like, oh, it's cool. But
yeah. I'll jump in and say, did you see the trailer for the people who made Brothers, the next game they're doing with the Prison Break game?
I heard about it. I did not see it.
Called A Way Out. It looks pretty cool.
Not only do I have a backlog of games, but I have a backlog of game trailers now. This sucks. Yeah.
That's what you get for taking time off for going away. Yeah.
No, you know what it is I took some social media apps off of my phone, and that I did not realize how much ambient knowledge I was sucking in just through having them on my phone. So, the benefit of that is I'm not sucking in nearly as much negative stuff as well, but it means I'm a little more out of touch. So
was that a decision for your vacation, or was that just a regular life decision that you made?
There was a really good sermon at the church I go to. It was a couple weeks before the vacation, but it was not about ditch your technology or anything, but they were talking about a study where scientifically it showed that people who spent a certain amount of time reading about the Boston bombings, terrorist attacks, experienced the same levels of negative effects from stress as the people who were at the attacks.
Hmm.
So the same equal levels of stress and negative effects of stress as people who were actually. I was like, oh man, that's feels
See,
like there's
I,
a lot of yeah.
I have the opposite thing where all of my social media is pretty much filled with things like running posts and cute puppies and that's what the people that I know tend to post and then random video game things, and that's about it. I mean, every once in a while something political's in there, but that's about it every once in a while, and otherwise it's not really depressing stuff. It's all cute, happy relief. So yeah.
Well, I think we'll see how long this lasts. I'm trying to stay informed and like, I'll check in on news sites and
right.
You know, in general, I'm not like burying my head in the sand, but I'm kind of doing it sans the filter of outrage and ire and sarcasm that usually I would get it through on social media.
Well, yeah, like I do have, like my parents have the news on all the time. And so I'm constantly hearing the news every time.
It's like having a window open that pumps in toxic gas. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, like, I'm keeping up to date on what's going on in the world, but at the same time, I'm also not getting it in my social media, so that's fine.
Yeah. Hey, Dennis, do you mind if I take a moment and become Paul Pro Tip?
Go for it.
Okay. Pro tip for you, there's an app that I use, so I don't spend any time on Twitter. It is a write-only medium, and mm-hmm. I look and see if, like, somebody at me with, like a concern about, like, a network thing, but in general, yeah, write-only medium. However, I have an app called Nuzzle, N-U-Z-Z-E-L.
Okay.
Plugs into Twitter. And if the people that you follow, like generally, like if X number of people share the same article, you'll get like a little bloop and say, hey, this is a thing that the people you follow, you know, more than three or more than five people have done this. And it doesn't present any of the commentary. It doesn't, you know, like you can press a button
to get that. Yeah.
But it's like, if there's something huge or like a lot of the time for me, it's like Waypoint or Polygon features about, you know, cool articles or long form things. There's some political stuff in there, too. But like it's a way to get the content without being hooked up to the fire hose, because I have a similar just constant malaise around that. And I had to cut Twitter kind of out of my life.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I love that. N-U-Z-Z-E-L or L-E?
E-L.
E-L. Cool.
Yeah. And that's not a paid sponsorship or anything. It's just an app that I heard about that has made it easier for me not to use Twitter. Especially because doing what Jala does requires a lot of work to curate and like cut everybody who is negative or cut anything that doesn't add value out.
Cool. All right. Yeah. Anyway, there's a hell of a tangent. I've been saving up that tangent for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
To get out there.
Awesome. You feel a great relief now that that's out?
Yeah, you know, it feels good.
Yeah. Good. Well, you used up all your tangent points, so expect it to say, be
straight. I'm just
going to
spend the rest of the episode venting now.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What's everyone else been up to?
Not much. This is the beginning of hour number 4 for recording for me.
Oh man.
I'm going to be out of town this weekend, so I recorded the first part of the Metal Gear Solid 2 episode today. Ooh. And that was 3.5 hours. So.
Oh, okay.
That's a lot.
Yeah. It'll edit down to like 3 hours, but
what's that for?
Watch out for fireballs.
Okay, cool.
It's such a, we live in the world where you're like 3.5 hours. And I was like, oh, you're like, don't worry. It'll edit down to 3.
Don't worry about it. Oh, and then there's probably going to be 3.5 more, next weekend when we record part 2 of it, because the back half of that game is really, really dense.
Yeah. If any game could sustain that much discussion.
Yeah. It's been talked to death, but it's fun. It's fun to dunk on Kojima.
but we want to hear you guys talk it to death.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that's what's going on here. Just really busy getting ready for like time off that is going to be mostly driving home and then driving back, so not really time off at all.
yeah. How about Ben? What's Ben been up to?
Trying to rack my brain for that. I'm doing Rick and Morty trivia tomorrow, so I'm excited about that.
Oh, cool.
So I've been trying to watch that over the weekend to catch back up.
Are you participating or are you helping to organize?
I am participating.
Okay.
It's at a local brewery.
I figured that was the way of things.
if I was running Rick and Morty trivia, I would have people try to draw a plumbus by memory. Just to see like how close they got to it.
And then that would be tough to evaluate.
Yeah. that's something I will do occasionally at work, is ask somebody, okay, like if they're standing at a whiteboard, hey, draw Homer Simpson for me. And then, and I only do it to the non-artists, but it's like, hey, draw Homer Simpson from memory. And then it's fun.
I can do the M and the G.
Oh, yeah.
But that's about it.
Yeah, that's always a good time. But
it doesn't, his eyes touch his nose too, right?
Yeah,
isn't it really something weird like that?
Yeah, that like it sticks out between the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like most noses tend to do.
All right, I'll send you guys a picture of my attempt to do this as you were mentioning this. It's pretty terrible.
But yeah, well, that sounds like fun. Mm-hmm. Is that like part of like the season three premiere? Or?
So it's specifically on season two of the three seasons. So got to hone in on what you need to memorize. Cole, I feel like you'd be really good at it just with like the name recall. I feel like you're really good at.
Probably. I've only seen season two once. I need to go back and go again. I think my favorite gag in that is Rick not wanting to live on the planet where everything was on the cob. That's the only thing I can really remember. Mm-hmm. Jala, how about you?
Well, marathon season is starting up again soon, but also I have some medical stuff going on, so it's been kind of rough to train lately, and it will be for the next few weeks as I recover from this procedure I've got coming on next week. But yeah, it's my goal to get to where I was last season anyway. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this season I'm going to be changing up my training plan, so I'm not just running, but I'm also doing boot camp. So. Mm. That'll be fun. Yeah. So trying to sort out all of that and kind of like prepare stuff so that way when I'm in convalescence and all that, you know, like stuff goes smoothly and I can kind of transition back into doing all of my stuff since, you know, the start of the season is kind of like, at least it's not the middle of the season,
right,
or the end of the season. But I mean, still, yeah. Why couldn't I have had this thing happen earlier? Damn. Yeah. But anyway. That's okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, that. Also, it's not going to be right away, but my sister and niece and nephew are going to be coming to visit sometime in September, and we're planning that right now. And my mom is the type who has to plan everything, like, right away, and, like, her show of affection is having a heart attack about, like, you know, every last aspect of your trip, like, that she could possibly worry about. Her way of showing affection is by worrying about everything. So she's gonna be driving me nuts for the next like month and a half until you know, like, she settles down and everything is good to go, and then she'll be okay. So so it'll be fun to have them here, but yeah, it's not gonna be until September, but yeah, in the meantime I'll be very busy planning and trying to calm my mom.
Oh geez. Yeah. Huh. Well, it's cool you get to see more of your family, more of your sister.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I mean, sounds like we've all got a lot going on. Like, summer's a weird season.
Time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As a side note, to talk about that, one place that we eat at for lunch like a week is like this mall food court that's nearby.
Okay.
And so it's been very weird the last couple of weeks because now there's like a bunch of high schoolers there. And like normally it's just like single parents or whatever. I don't know, weird dynamics.
Oh yeah,
weird being around high school students.
They're just menacing you. Yeah,
so young.
Yeah, it's coming up at you. Just out of the way, old man. I just mm-hmm. can't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that was always rough when I worked at the mall, was having to deal with kids who were there as like a daycare supplement.
Yeah.
And I'm counting the high schoolers.
For sure.
Oh, the high schoolers, yeah. High schoolers are the worst because they're the ones who don't think they're there as a daycare supplement. They think they're there because they're hot shit.
Yeah. The worst.
Also, the XCOM 2 expansion looks pretty awesome.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. See, I'm happy you did that in a natural lull as opposed to just chiming in while one of us was talking, which when you, I was terrified you were going to do that based on what you said.
He's not being Jala.
Cool.
I can't pull Jala off.
No.
It's more like it.
So we've got a lot to talk about this week, actually. So it makes sense to continue. I feel like we have achieved the requisite level of banter. We've got mm-hmm. the usual kind of show for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. Why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Jala, you added this story to the Slack before I did, so I don't know that I don't know if you will mind if I swoop it or if
I dropped two stories, yeah. So you can pick one and I can pick the other one. I don't care.
Yeah, I think I'm going to claim this one by virtue of the fact that I'm actually really excited about it. Which is that Nintendo has announced the follow-up to the NES Classic Edition, the Super NES Classic Edition. and a move mm-hmm. that surprises very few people. What'll be surprising is that, you know, is if anybody gets their hand on it. But I'm going to be much more dogged about this, because this looks cool as fuck to me.
And it also has the unreleased Star Fox 2 on it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I know that it's been available in ROM, but I've never really gone ahead and played it. So I'm really excited to play it like in an official release. Because, you know, who knows? Who knows with ROMs? But yeah, it's got like 21 games on it, 13 mm-hmm. of which we've done on Watch Out for Fireballs. There's so much good stuff in this. So much great mm-hmm. shit. stats coming out on the 29th of September. Going to be $80, which is pricey, yes, for a thing that plays old games. But it comes with two controllers, which is really important because, hey, it comes with Mario Kart and Street mm-hmm. Fighter and F-Zero. And that's really exciting. A lot of people that I've heard have been really excited about the RPGs on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just that it ships with three of the biggest SNES JRPGs outside of, you know, Chrono Trigger. People obviously were whining. I mean, people were whining. Nintendo did a thing. People were angry. Full stop. But
Yeah.
Like, really, the only thing that I'm upset about with this, A, is, you know, it'll be impossible to get a hold of, but B, there is no Tetris Attack. Like, that is the only thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's going to be on the Japanese one, but it is not going to be on ours, and that's a bummer. But, like, this is great. Yeah.
And let's clarify, the games aren't preloaded on. They are, you're going to have to buy the games extra, right?
No, they're preloaded.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they're preloaded.
Did I miss
that? Yeah.
So
that's even better.
And did you mention the release date?
Yeah, September 29th.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
So do you think this is going to be a trend and they're going to do like a tiny N64 next? And then like a tiny GameCube?
How long until we see not just that, but then a tiny PS1?
given how successful these things have been, I would actually be surprised if we don't see Sony bring something out. Sega has done their own kind of like lame version of this. I don't know, I'm pretty jazzed about it. It has some of my it has fucking Kirby's Dream Course on it. Who would have thought to put that on? But that's a very fun, cute, weird game. I don't know. I'm really excited. How about you guys? Like, anybody have any love for what's on this?
That is an awesome drawing.
That is closer than a lot of what I've seen, Ben, as far as Homer Simpson drawings go.
Yeah. Sorry to interject in the podcast. I was trying to do that on the slide.
No, that's perfectly fine. I don't know. I don't want to belabor the point on this SNES classic, but like, I'm pretty jazzed about it. Jolly, you're the one who put this in the Slack as a story to talk about. What do you think?
It's cute. I'm not going to be able to afford one because of rolling set of things I'm dealing with, but it's really cool and it's a mini SNES, of course. Everybody should get one if they can get one, but you know, it's going to be another limited release. That's the only thing that's really terrible about it. Yeah. Like, if you're going to make it a limited release, at least release a few more than what you are releasing. That was ridiculous last year. So if they keep on doing this, I can only imagine that it's just going to turn into like a frenzy.
Yeah. There were a couple of follow-on stories. Nintendo did say that they're going to make substantially more of these than they made, but given how much demand there was, I have no idea what substantially more is or what the actual demand would be for this if they put it out.
Knowing Nintendo, they're gonna come back around and be like, look, two boxes of them instead of one.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I don't know,
we'll see.
Yep. Anything else about this, or do we want to go on to the next story?
Exciting stuff.
Cool. Let's see, Dennis, I'm curious about these mods.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that Rockstar issued a statement to Take-Two, effectively saying, chill out, dude. Calm down.
Take-Two being the publisher of a lot of Rockstar's games.
And the reason being that Take-Two had sent a cease and desist letter to a prominent modder of Grand Theft Auto 4 called Open 4.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, had threatened them with legal action, et cetera, et cetera. And it sounds like Rockstar kind of pulled him aside behind the curtain and was like, this is totally not cool. This is how you get people to hate you.
Yeah.
And Take-Two has come out and said basically, okay, you know, we've discussed, we're not going to take legal action. We'll be cool about it.
Yeah.
So good on Rockstar. The reason Take-Two kind of gave for being so aggressive to this particular mod is that it touched the online multiplayer.
Oh shit. Yeah.
And so they've said, you know, they're going to back off. They're not going to do these blanket cease and desist orders, but they're going to hold to not allowing anything that touches multiplayer, you know, which is understandable. There's concerns about being, you know, modding it so it's easier to harass other people, et cetera, which, you know, for it being a Grand Theft Auto game is kind of ironic. But the one other unfortunate thing is that the other thing they're holding on to from the cease and desist letter is that they're not going to allow people to use or import other IPs into the game, which means that Red Dead Redemption 5 is going to stay dead, unfortunately.
Yeah, that okay. That makes a little bit of sense.
Yeah, I mean, the second one is more sketchy legal blah than the first of not wanting to enable harassment. But I think this really highlights a policy that I would love to see more people enact, which is the first contact with any, you know, modding group or anything should not be through a legal team ever.
it makes the actual company look so bad. Like, they could have all of the legal standing in the world, and pretty much every time they do. But it just makes sense to handle it like with kind of soft gloves, like document it, make sure that like it goes through the proper channels and doesn't feel really, it doesn't feel like you're just, you know, breaking the rules or whatever. But yeah, you're absolutely right, Dennis. Like, don't make it the legal team, and also make sure that the move is to clarify as opposed to just stomp.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I know these people have community managers, right? Like, these are companies that are large enough to have multiple people whose job it is to interact with the community. Mm-hmm. Like, at least maybe the rule is that a community manager has to read any piece of communication that's about to go to a modding team or whatever, just because I don't know why they have trouble just interacting with people like humans. And I know there's a whole, you know, anyone who's a lawyer is probably like, dude, you don't know the half of it.
Oh yeah.
If you talk to someone on Twitter, they automatically own everything that you've done.
Yeah. So I know all of my jewels. Yeah.
Yeah. This seems like a relative fast turnaround from, you know, a publisher doing something scummy and controlling to being like, well, we were wrong and we're not going to do that. And that's encouraging.
Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully we see one, less of this happening in the first place, but then two, more of publishers acting like humans instead of giant corporations.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's in Rockstar's best interest to make sure that Take-Two is acting in their interests.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Jala, I apologize because your story would have been a really good one to segue off of mine. I realized that I had Dennis's up in my screen. Tell me what Sega is doing while Nintendo is rolling up their own little piece of hardware.
Well, while Nintendo's doing their thing, Sega has decided to really release all of their games on mobile for free. The first five games are currently available: Sonic the Hedgehog, Comic Zone, Phantasy Star 2, Kid Chameleon, and Altered Beast. And every 2 weeks, new titles will be added to what they are calling Sega Forever. Basically, the games are free to play, but they have ads. And to remove the ads, you pay $1.99. So that's it. You can play with touchscreen or a controller. And eventually they will be, or that they are playable offline, but you can save your progress online if you wish. And allegedly Sega said that they're going to be eventually adding a multiplayer option to many of the games. So, you know, it won't load in with, you know, multiplayer if it's, you know, a game that happens to have two player mode, but eventually they will put it in. So, however, I mean, that sounds cool and all that they're doing that and releasing it for basically free. I mean, you just have to deal with ads being on your screen. But critics say that they are pretty bad ports, dropped frames, hitches and skips, that kind of a thing. So I don't know. I have not actually downloaded any of them to try them out. So I don't know how much they are, you know, a poor port.
Yeah.
Or if, you know, what the differences are between like iPhone and Android, you know, like I don't know if one is particularly better than the other one or if they're just equivalent or what. So
yeah.
Don't know.
Do you want to tag me in on this? Because I played a little bit of the Sonic one.
Go.
Oh, cool.
Do it.
Yeah. Played it on my iPad. I was too lazy to grab my Bluetooth controller to play it like an actual game. So I may need to go back and revise this. On the standards of playing it with a digital analog stick or whatever, it seemed fine. But the idea that it was going to ship with ads, you know, and I would have to pay to get rid of them, there's, for some reason, something of a block for me in that approach to it and giving it to you. But then, you know, having the, you know, doing the usual free-to-play kind of stuff on it. Didn't really run into any of the glitches, except for like some like screen tearing and things like that. What I've heard is that the glitches are not necessarily so bad that they affect gameplay. It is just in shoddy emulation that the visuals and music get a little bit fucked up. So it's up to you whether or not that matters. I just, aside from Phantasy Star 2, I don't see why you would play any of these with a digital on-screen control scheme, right?
Here's the kind of question for me. Like, all right, so Nintendo releases this cute little box that you can buy that has certain games preloaded onto it, and that's their nostalgia thing. Sega, meanwhile, is dropping their entire library, but you have to pay $2.99 or like $1.99 if you want to get rid of the ads on the game. Mm-hmm. You can still play it for free, but you will have to pay just $2 per whichever games you particularly like that you want to get rid of the ads to. You know, where like, you know, SNES Classic, it's $80 for 20 something games. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, you know, which of these is kind of like the thing that's more appealing to you? Like, which approach would you have liked it if Nintendo had done the thing that they're doing? Or would you have liked it if Sega had done what Nintendo's doing? You know,
the ideal thing would be Virtual Console on the Switch for me.
Sure.
I think the like the little box is cute. Would have been amazing to get an NES Classic because I love the design on the, you know, North American NES, and I would love to have like a tiny one. I also, you know, have some nostalgia for the American SNES, even though it is kind of a nightmare design wise. I like the idea of buying like a curated collection of these games, especially when they knock it out of the fucking park like they just did. Getting it piecemeal. Even if they were like handing it out for free, somehow that feels to me like a worse experience, even if it is a higher value for the money. There's something about it being on the phone that just doesn't sit right with me. And I'm sorry that I've like dominated this, so I will step to the background.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like
Go ahead.
It seems like a similar argument for like paying for an app up front and then getting it versus pay to play. It seems like it's, I mean, that's the cutting point here. So I can see the idea of not liking Sega if you don't like pay-to-play games. I could understand that argument.
Mm-hmm.
So it has ads is a very vague phrase. Like, Cole, you've played it. Are they plastered everywhere? Do you have to watch one before every level? Or is it not really intrusive? Like,
It was in the menus and then in between levels and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
But so you wouldn't count it like bad?
Yeah, it wasn't like it popped up. I mean, it wasn't intrusive, I guess. I would say, aside from the in-game ad part of it, it didn't like pop up and, you know, block something, you know. It wasn't interruptive, I guess, is the way I should say.
When you pay like the dollar or two to get rid of the ads, is it for a certain amount of time and then they come back?
Nope, it's forever.
Nope.
Kind of interesting.
So for me, like, okay, I understand the controls on a touchscreen are not the same, but, you know, I would get a little controller to play a bunch of the Sega library on my phone because you guys know that I do mobile gaming all the time. So, I mean, you know, hey, all these games that I used to play on my phone that I can derp around with whenever I feel like it, I don't really care if there's ads. That's cool. It's no problem for me. If I had a Switch, I would be absolutely in your park of wanting, you know, the stuff, you know, virtual console-wise. That way, because honestly, as cute as it is, am I going to have an SNES Classic? No. And if it was still, here's the thing, if it was even still available, like widely available everywhere, I still wouldn't buy one because I get that it's cute. I get that it's nostalgic, but like, I don't want a thing that just does one thing. It's kind of like having kitchen appliances and every appliance does one thing. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I don't want to have a specialized doodad that does just this one thing and that's the only thing it does and you can't put any other games into it or whatever, yeah, you know? Yeah. Like, I would rather have an actual old SNES and a bunch of old cartridges and just play the original damn thing. But, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
So that's my camp, my personal opinion on this.
Yeah, I think that's a completely valid argument. Yeah.
Dennis, we haven't heard you.
Yeah, I think my question is on the games that they put out. So I've played Sonic the Hedgehog, and I have heard of most of the other ones, but I haven't played any of them. So is this set of games like the best that they have to offer?
They're releasing all of them. But are you talking about the ones that they already have out right now?
The first five. Like, was this a strong opening? I've never even heard of Comic Zone.
Yeah,
I don't know about Comic Zone. Altered Beast and Sonic the Hedgehog and Kid Chameleon, those are all solid titles. And Phantasy Star, of course. So
Yeah. It's Phantasy Star 2. Like that's one that is generally considered by a lot of people to be really, really good.
Yeah.
Okay. It's kind of archaic as far as JRPGs go, but it was also very early on. Comic Zone is kind of a mediocre beat 'em up that has a pretty cool visual gimmick where you're jumping from like panel to panel in comics, like in a comic. Yeah,
that's pretty cool. I guess I think at the core of it for me is I go to my console for a different thing than I go to my phone for, and I'm looking for one kind of experience when I'm on my phone, and looking for another when I go to something that's hooked up to my TV. And I think that these retro games kind of still fall into that hooked up to the TV category for me. So I'd almost always rather go for something that does hook up.
Yeah. For what it matters, these apps also have an Apple TV version to them. So I could also do that and just keep my Bluetooth controller plugged into my Apple TV and then just use that as an emulation machine. But I've got an emulator on that anyway.
You get static there. I couldn't quite.
Yeah, it was weird.
I think this will be more relevant for me once they do an N64 emulator, because I think I'll jump on board at that point. Mm. But I definitely think it would be cool if you could customize like what games are loaded on it to begin with. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, like on the machine. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shrug. I don't know. It's unfortunate that both of these happened right around the same time, but I think Sega timed theirs for, it was like around the time of Sonic's 26th anniversary or something like that.
Yeah.
They
partnered with someone in Japan to make kick-ass Sonic inspired sneakers.
Ooh.
Which are awesome except for two things. Like, I would have bought them in a heartbeat. The first problem is they only go up to 10.5 and I'm an 11.
Eh.
So that sucks. And then the other problem is that they've got Sonic the Hedgehog just like sewn really boldly into the back of the shoe.
Oh,
but it's in the same color as the fabric that it's sewn into, so it's not that bad.
It is. It was like if I had my druthers, I would have loved to have gotten it just without anything on the heel, just knowing that these are Sonic inspired shoes. They're really close to what you see in the game. And like let people make the connection or be able to point it out when I want. The name emblazoned on there, it feels like I'm wearing an ad a little bit.
Yeah.
Like you it, are I think wearing if that was ad. Gone. Yeah. But I'm wearing a subtle ad. It's different. I think if that had been gone, I would have fought the half shoe size and at least tried them, because they were only like $60.
Yeah. Huh. Oh, and they're not even like running shoes. They're like a boat shoe or a loafer or something.
No, they're stylized.
Yeah.
I really like the style of them. I really like kind of they took the oeuvre of Sonic's footwear and into a sneaker that you could wear in everyday life, and then plastered Sonic the Hedgehog on the heel.
Yeah.
One step too far. Just one tiny step too far. It was interesting that they've done all this stuff I feel like I heard more about his 26th birthday than I did about his 25th.
I think they didn't have a lot ready for it. Man, I'm excited for Sonic Mania. That can't come out soon enough, actually.
What's kind of funny is that I was, because of all the Final Fantasy Tactics stuff, I was looking on the App Store and, you know, pulling it up to see if they had Shining Force 2, because I had this whole long Shining Force discussion, and then, like, all of Shining Force vanished off the App Store, and I'm like, why is it gone? But I have Shining Force 1 on my phone, mm-hmm. because I bought the app a long time ago, yeah. and it's still there, so I can still play it, no problem. And I was wondering, but then Sega Forever came out, and so they're basically going to be re-releasing Shining Force again, but yeah. free with ads. So
that'll be like a day one purchase for you, though. Like $2 for a huge JRPG like that is.
But I already have it on my phone. I don't need to buy it again.
Oh, I was thinking about like Shining Force 2 and 3.
Oh yeah, Shining Force 2. Yeah, because like I was talking to people, and I was like, you know, I played Shining Force 1 a lot, and then I played the remake a lot, because the remake Resurrection of the Dark Dragon is probably my favorite incarnation, favorite. A really, really good port of the first game, but like updating it and everything. They didn't do a whole lot, but mm-hmm. they did what they did. Improved the gameplay quite a bit.
Yeah.
I didn't play Shining Force 2 very much. Like, I think I beat it once. And I owned it. And I played the hell out of the first one, and I only played the second one once, and then the third one I played a bunch too, because that's one of my favorite games, is Shining Force 3. So mm-hmm. I don't know. That's why I was like, you know, I should probably go back and play 2 again, because everybody's got all this nostalgia for that one, mm-hmm. and everybody played that one, and that's the one that everybody remembers and talks about. But that is the one that I didn't really play. I mean, like, I played it, but I don't retain much memory about it.
Yeah. Huh. So, well, soon enough.
I don't know. Yeah, check
2 weeks.
Yeah. It'll be one of those times where I just like have a minute and I'm just like, okay, I floated off somewhere, and then I'll pull up the App Store. Hey guys, <there's> Shining Force 2.
Holy shit, this is my life now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, I want to hear your story as well. Although,
basically my story is just a jumping off platform to talk about Steam sale.
Yeah, yeah. Do we want to compare hauls? I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much of a haul. I've just added a bunch of things to my wish list, and I'm waiting until like July 4th for whether or not I'll pull the trigger on any of them or not.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so Steam sale started up this last week, I think, which we mentioned last week. But I don't know, were you guys surprised by any of the deals? Is there anything on your to-buy list or already purchase list? Or
I'm surprised that Friday the 13th was not on sale.
Yeah.
Like, what?
It was not.
I mean, I was a real goober. I bought it anyway when it wasn't on sale. So,
oh, my. Okay.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
We'll have to talk about that later in the what you've been playing section.
Yeah.
That's not that called that anymore.
it hasn't been for several years, but.
Some of the ones I was surprised by, or some of the ones I'm thinking of picking up, is I Am Bread is 80% off, and so it's $260 right now, which is seems like a pretty good deal.
It's worth it to struggle to do it. I did not realize until I played that game how hard it is to be bread, but it is pretty hard.
How carefree bagels have it.
It's basically that and cart life for games that have changed my...
Yep, you don't know the struggles until you become a baguette. And then
a baguette Kerbal with a big heart.
Yeah, Kerbal Space Program's half off, so it's $20. So I'm thinking about picking that one up. A lot of people have highly recommended that, so we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Game. It seems like if it gets its claws in, it'll get in deep.
So outside of Friday the 13th, though, there's like a huge amount of coverage here. I think the only game on my wish list that is not on sale is Factorio, which is also holding strong at like $20 for Factorio.
So. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. What about you guys? Do you guys see anything that looked interesting?
I did.
Yeah, go.
So I've been eyeing the Vermintide DLC for the longest time. Just because I really enjoyed that game and, you know, wanted the stuff that was extra in it. So I went on the sale and checked, and sure enough, all the DLC is 15% off, which is awesome. And if I was going to pick up all of the DLC that I didn't have, it would have cost me $28. And I was about to click add all DLC to cart until I realized, oh, wait, there's a bundle. It's the Fat Shark bundle, which has the collector's edition of the base game, all the DLC, except for one, the newest one, which I wasn't planning on getting anyway, and then like five other Fat Shark games for $20.
Oh, yeah.
So check the bundles that your games are a part of. You might find a bundle that has everything you want plus five extra games for cheaper than the base sale price.
Yeah, they should like black out the purchase button and say, no, you idiot.
Yeah, here, yeah. You dummy.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was my happy surprise. Obviously, there's a ton of other stuff on my wish list that's on sale that I'm kind of keeping an eye on, and we shall see. But the good news is for Vermintide, you don't have to have the DLC to play the DLC. You just have to be playing with someone who has the DLC to play the DLC. Mm-hmm. So yep. What y'all need to do is, while Vermintide is on sale for 2/3 off, go pick the base game up for $10. Play with me and Jala. Jala, I don't know if you have the DLC. But, you know, play with me at the very least, and I will be able to get you into all the DLC.
Nice. Oh, and also you can totally pick up Zombie Army Trilogy because it was like, what, $9, I think, is what everybody's telling me right now.
I saw that
so
one.
So you can totally
yeah.
get that. Yeah, you can pick that one up and play that game. And also, yeah, like for me, I don't have any money right now, but I picked up two things because it was like the two games were like under $10 total for the two of them. And yeah. So I was like, okay, I'll get this and I can't afford anything else. But I got a game that I will talk about during the grind, and then I also picked up In Verbis Vertis, which I mentioned when I was talking about Last Word, because that is like it's an action adventure game where you speak into a microphone, and that's how you cast spells in this game. And Last Word is a little bit different, like it's a JRPG that the battles are based around conversation mechanics. So that's how that came about, like, you know, having been mentioned. And I think it's like $4.99 right now for that game. So I picked that up. I have not played it yet, but I did play the other game that I picked up, and I will talk about that later.
Nice.
So yeah
For me, it's made me like reevaluate some stuff that was on my wish list, because I think I added it a while back, basically anything horror related. Then it just, you know, sales pass by and it's like, I don't want to buy that, so maybe I should just get rid of it. So my wish list is more representative. Kind of a small one for me, because I just ran out of game budget for this month. Maybe when July 1st comes around, I will look at more. But no, I picked up like Condemned. It was like for like $5. I added more of the Final Fantasy games that they've added to Steam onto it. So, like, I didn't realize they had Final Fantasy X and X-2 on Steam. And that was on sale this time, along with, like, 9 and Lightning Returns. Because who knows, maybe someday I just like the idea of having all of my Final Fantasy games on Steam.
Sure.
Because that's cool. Energy Hook, that game that was developed by the Spider-Man 2 guy. That's the grappling hook game. Yeah, that was half off, so I picked that up. And then I couldn't contain myself. I grabbed Friday the 13th, although Ben, I'm sorry, I haven't played it yet, just because assignment play stuff.
That's okay.
Yeah.
We should play that whenever you get around to installing it.
Yeah. And I'm very sorry. I got your invite when you invited me to play Rocket League, but then I was like, oh yeah, why not? And then I forgot, oh, it wasn't installed. So by the time it was installed, you were gone.
Yeah. Look, that's,
anytime anyone wants to play Rocket League, I'll play with them. But a lot of times when I invite people, I'm not like expecting them to play. So it's just usually pinging people.
Yeah, I see invites pop up and I'm like, I don't think I have that installed. Is it free now?
The strategy is just to like, I have the hard drive space, so I just have a lot of games installed that are like co-op that people might, you know, play with me. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of have stuff usually installed. I have a large chunk of them anyway. Yeah. So also Damned is on sale for like under $7, I want to say. It's like 60% off.
Yeah.
So yeah, that one is, so I need to get back and play that some more, but yeah, you know, like I gotta drag people into playing it. So
yeah.
It's cool.
So yeah. The only other thing that I've had my eye on is Planet Coaster. But that one is a little bit costly. Like normally it's like $45 and it's discounted to 30. I just don't know if I want to, you know, spend that much on it. So.
Word.
But yeah, it's a, I don't know, it's one of those things. Like, Steam sales are like Humble Bundles, where as time goes by, they get less and less kind of momentous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But there's
still stuff. Riding the wave, I guess.
What's that?
Only, I think I'm still riding the wave, having only been on Steam for a year or two.
But. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, you're, everything is great.
The lights are so bright.
Oh, I was also looking at the Magic Circle because that's 70% off, but, you know, I don't know when I'm going to play that. So right, I was like, I don't really need to buy it right this minute. It can sit on my wish list. It's fine. I'll get it sometime.
A good way to gauge it is it's like, what can I play right now? Like, if I were to buy it right now and like try and do it that way.
Well, and that's exactly why, like, the two games that I picked up, like, although I haven't picked up and actually played in Verbis Virtus yet, I intend to sometime soon because I was playing Last Word and that's also conversation based, you know, like, you know, having something to do with speaking. But the other game I already have been playing. So, yeah, it's been good. It's nice. Been a great success, my two purchases.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. This was posted by Dennis. So, Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I asked the nice people about character progression in games, which pretty much every game has some sort of character progression now. So the question is, what upgrade systems do the best job of giving you interesting choices and new verbs instead of just ticking up your percentage bonuses?
Yeah. And I'll get us started here with Ollie, who says, Batman's Arkham games. They really set out a path for you and make you think about what to choose. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think Arkham.
I didn't play.
Oh, good. go ahead.
I didn't play far enough in them to know offhand, you know, so I don't know.
Yeah, the biggest part is it's not so much that they make it kind of crazy to, you know, jump around or move around. It's more like, hey, you can choose to get better at fighting the way you want to fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. So nothing huge and flashy. It will just either improve, give you more charges on a particular attack, or give an item that
new
you already have. Yeah, new functionality. There we go.
Yeah. It's because it works the same way with Shadow of Mordor too, which I think they run on the same engine. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think they're like one of the de facto types of games that do that, where it's not about increasing like plus X strength or whatever. It's just about like, oh, do more verbs, and then those things will be more effective for killing enemies.
Yeah, it's super good. I think the one problem I always have is I forget what verbs I have.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, you know, okay, you start out and you kind of learn on this tap, 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 you know, square thing. It's like, you know, it's kind of a timing game. And then they start throwing in wrinkles. And by the end of it, it's like, you know, if you hold circle and triangle at the same time that you're tapping R1 at the time the enemy is about to critical hit you, then you can reflect back and hit X and circle at the same time to flip over. And it's just like, I don't, you know, if I try to get outside of my tap, 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 I'll screw it up and get hit. So I'm just going to stick to the base rhythm there.
Yeah. I've always told, and always, I'm never not telling the story about when I played Arkham City and forgot that the line gun existed because no stage made it so you had to use it. And that was like your way to like grapple horizontally. You know, you would set it up and you could just travel along. But there was one hallway in a sewer where basically the only way to get by was to use that. And I ended up spending just a ton of time trying to drag over like pallets to like jump along.
Oh,
like,
no.
What the fuck? Like, literally, it took me like a half hour. And this was before there were a lot of like guides up, because I was playing that game around the time it came out, like a boss. And then finally, like, I just, somebody asked the same question and they're like, oh, use your line gun, you dummy. It's like, in no world should I be able to forget something that important.
Yeah. Is role playing Batman. He has so many gadgets in his belt that's the challenge, is just remembering everything he has.
There's the elegant solution. Like, just after a certain amount of time, the tool that you're supposed to use to solve the problem, like, starts glinting on their belt. It's like, it doesn't tell you what button to hit or where to use it, but you can kind of see, like, okay, I'm supposed to use this hammer for this nail.
Then the colonel calls you on the codec and says, Snake, try using,
Right.
Jala, what does Russell say?
Russell says, any and all point upgrade systems are my catnip, so I have no ability to think critically here. The XCOM two cool things choose one system was very satisfying, especially if you make the perks random.
Make the perks random.
That's like one of the modes you can do after you beat the game, where instead of it being two fixed perks and you choose between them, it'll like roll a dice that it's like two random perks, and then you pick one of the two random ones.
Yeah. I thought he was talking about like actually flipping a coin to make the decision.
Oh, that could be interesting too. That's the one complaint that I have about the XCOM system, and apparently the Long War solves a lot of this, is that binary choice is cool. But whatever you pick, there's like two skill trees, you know, like the your sniper class can be a sharpshooter or can be a gunslinger. And if, you know, that very first choice you make kind of gives you momentum towards one side or the other. Mm-hmm. And I haven't quite found the class yet where it makes sense to multi-class or take, you know, different elements of both skill trees. Mm-hmm. It always seems to make the most sense to just go straight down whatever side you pick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, it's really one interesting choice in the guise of, you know, eight levels of choices.
Yeah. Ben, what does Jeffrey say?
Sorry, I'm trying to think of all the permutations of XCOM perks now. Jeffrey says, I'm a fan of the perks in the Fallout series. Not only are they just incremental upgrades for the most part, but perks like the Mysterious Stranger add huge amounts of flavor to the game world. While also mechanical benefits. Yep.
Not just incremental upgrades.
Yeah, excuse me. The opposite of what I said. The same thing as what he wrote.
Yeah.
Also, Wild Wasteland or Weird Wasteland is another one that I can think of that probably supports that as well.
Oh, yeah, that's like top tier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think in Fallout, one of my favorite examples of the way they meld these two is, what is it, Bloody Mess?
Bloody Mess is awesome.
Yeah.
Which take like, that as soon as you can.
Which like, okay, it makes the game gorier because everybody, you know, I guess by taking this one perk, everybody becomes a water balloon full of butcher offal. But
I throw a pencil at you, you burst into thousands of pieces.
Yeah. So it's not like I'm not like Beavis and Butthead over here. but it gives you 5% extra damage. So like mm-hmm. it's this amazing split because, you know, the extra percentage isn't usually that big of a deal, but like taken across all of that stuff, like 5% is a really like 5% against everything, as opposed to this really you know, restricted benefit that you would get, like plus 0.2% on cold attacks. Mm-hmm. Like that's a big deal, and it's tied to this thing that is tonally accurate for the series.
Mm-hmm.
Big thumbs up. Dennis, what does Tanner say?
Tanner says, recently the Surge did a decent job with how they approached leveling a character. Instead of putting points into your flesh and blood protagonist, the Surge opts to have you upgrade your exoskeleton instead, allocating points to literally power up your suit for more power-hungry upgrades, allows for a wide variety in customization and playstyle. Want more stamina? It might be at the cost of health. Want a more active abilities? You might do less damage, but have a deeper moveset, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
I like cool. that. I like that mentality of like, we're not going to like force you to choose one verb or the other, but if you want to manage a ton of verbs, each of those verbs might be slightly less effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, this is a game that, like any Souls, like I have equal numbers of people saying, oh my God, you have to play this and talk about it for a year, and people saying, never, ever touch this. So it's hard to look at this, but that sounds neat. I like that. I like that conceit where you're making, you know, kind of ongoing compromises. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rob writes, I liked Final Fantasy X's original sphere grid system, but I loved the international version of it in the remaster because it lets you build the characters however you want from the start instead of following their archetype paths. I used it to make Yuna my heavy physical hitter. Her kind of wimpy attack animation and the satisfying bonk sound of her rod being followed by big numbers and death was extremely satisfying.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. First off, that's great. I'm curious how the equipment supplements that.
But
this might be my answer. Not the international version because I haven't played that one yet, but Final Fantasy X Sphere Grid is kind of tops, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's fun.
Yeah. Jala.
Awesome picture of it too, by the way.
Oh, of
further
this,
question
of the. What?
Is that not the sphere grid for the picture for the multiplayer?
No, that's
that's Path of Exiles upgrade.
Oh my god. I thought that was a wide map of the sphere grid for Final Fantasy X, so excuse me.
No.
No, and I think that is just the passive upgrade menu for Path of Exile.
Oh god, it gives me a panic attack. Jala, what does David say?
David says Final Fantasy Tactics. Games with job systems tend to offer a good, meaningful progression system, but FFT is the holy grail, a healthy number of jobs with distinctly unique abilities to pick from. It is truly customization heaven.
Yeah.
It is customization heaven, but also that means that if you're new to the game, you stare at it for a long time trying to figure out what to do. So... yeah.
Yeah, it is. It requires a lot of, let's say, attention.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Ben, why don't you continue that theme with Greg?
Combo.
Yeah.
Greg says, Final Fantasy V's job system was very unique and allowed a wide range of skills and character classes. I also really liked how BioWare does the upgrades in their games. For example, Baldur's Gate, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, Mass Effect, etc.
Yeah. It's funny to see Mass Effect listed with Baldur's Gate and Coder, actually, given that it is so much less based on tabletop than those previous two are.
Yeah.
Dennis, what does Sam say?
Sam says, while the late post-game eventually turns into a treadmill of incremental equipment upgrades, the skill system in Diablo 3 is fantastic. Leveling up just gives you more options. You can freely change skills whenever you aren't in combat, and pretty much every skill is viable. Instead of having to plan out a build in advance, you can pick the skills you have fun using and tweak everything else around them. Also, this question reminded me that the new Diablo 3 expansion drops in 2.5 hours, which means it's out by now. So thank you for that edit. The new character class, the Necromancer, returning from Diablo 2, is going to have many skeleton-focused skills.
Man, the Necromancer...
Breaking news. You heard it here first.
Skeletons confirmed. Man, the Necromancer was so fun to play as in Lord of Destruction. Yeah. Mm. Summoner class. Very good.
Oh, and you guys might have already mentioned this, but I got to meet Sam in person.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, and he is awesome.
Yeah.
So,
very nice dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Diablo and that series, and I think World of Warcraft are kind of the patient zero of, at least when I complain about those incremental upgrades, getting, 0.3% better at one thing as opposed to getting a new verb. But at the macro scale, I think Diablo 3 does a very good job of this based on my short demo of like playing the monk character. You are making choices about like which systems are going to complement each other,
Yeah, and I love the fact that you can switch between the skills pretty much at will, which means when you get that random drop that is like, oh my god, this makes this particular skill hit for 4x damage or whatever. You don't have to go, oh, I wish I had rolled that, or like, oh, now I got to go respec. Yeah. It's literally just like click, click, click. All right, let's go fuck some shit up.
I forget. Was it you, Dennis, who was playing that co-op with Jen, or was that another friend? Okay, there we go. I think I may know a couple of people who have a couple of husband and wife teams who have played that co-op on the PS4.
Yeah, I was talking with I think it was the Slack channel about how while Diablo 3's like aesthetics are very hardcore, the actual gameplay is pretty breezy.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a great just kind of light co-op experience if you can ignore the blood and gore and roaring. So
yeah. Was that you who read that?
Yeah, it was.
Okay, cool. John writes, Tactics Ogre, Let Us Cling Together gives you tons of skill options you can mix and match from different classes to make highly specialized soldiers. Probably not unlike Final Fantasy Tactics, although to be honest, you could probably get away with a party of 90% archers. Yeah. Tactics Ogre, Let Us Cling Together, that is very similar to Final Fantasy Tactics. I believe it's the same designer. It is just much more complex. You should know that before you go play it, John.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been intimidated by Let Us Cling Together, actually. But Jala, what does Michael say?
Michael says, I played Dying Light recently, which I felt had a great level system. It stuck to the Elder Scrolls method of giving you XP and a skill for practicing that skill. Almost every skill you could get was a new verb, and many were hugely empowering. You could unlock weapon throwing, parkour skills, new traps to use against zombies, camouflage, and even a grappling hook. Mm. I was always excited to get a level in that game.
I wonder if that's on sale. I would literally just be indulging my worst impulses by buying that. but I've heard really good stuff about Dying Light. I think even David here has played it.
Yeah, I remember him talking about it.
Yeah. Yep, give me a grappling hook. Now, one of you.
I'll head over. Hold on a second.
You probably have one and you forgot about it, just like with Batman.
So just wait for Dennis to clean out his house. He'll probably have one in there somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. That's where all my hooks went.
Oh, shoot. I forgot. I'm swinging on a grappling hook right now.
Oh, wow. Good mic. Good wind reject. Good wind rejection.
Yeah.
Ben, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, lots of games I've played have great systems to me, but I really can't speak to the full RPG experience. Destiny and Mad Max are the best frame of reference for me. They are very linear, yes, but very intuitive and easy to pick up for a casual player like me. Love games, but don't have a lot of time to play, being a full-time employee and father. Like Zelda also, as well, but not really sure if that would count. And then thanks us for the podcast.
Yeah. Thank you.
Zelda definitely counts.
Oh.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And yeah, thanks for the kind words, Jonathan.
Yeah. Breath of the Wild though, like you are making some pretty important choices about how you want to allocate your shrine points and stuff. Like the addition of I said sanity meter, and that'd be weird. The addition of a stamina meter actually changes that quite a bit.
It'd be great if they had a sanity meter where he's just always sane. Nothing ever happened in the game. But it's just there. Sure.
It's just some text in the menu that says, feeling fine. Dennis, what does Alexander say?
Alexander says, seen a lot of these replies, but the job system of various Final Fantasy games is king of character progression for me because they give you contained packages of skills and abilities towards a certain end, but at higher levels let you blend and experiment with those skills and abilities. Plus it gave us the red mage. I love a red mage. They have the best hats.
It's a pretty jaunty cap. Yeah. So that mix and match that ends up being the very best thing.
Yeah.
Actually being able to work toward one particular all empowering skill. Yeah.
Well, I think what that speaks to is that there are training wheels on early on, where it's like, okay, this is where this character is starting, this is their job. And I can train them up in that. And then once you've got a really good handle on the game in later levels, it kind of opens it up and lets you freestyle a bit more.
Yeah, yeah. And that's even carried out Final Fantasy 14. You pick jobs are separate from classes. So you're oh, am I a warrior or an arcanist? And then everything kind of stems from that. So you can get a smattering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's go around. Jason says, although not all choices in Horizon Zero Dawn's skill tree were great, it was supplemented well with a variety of weapon and ammo types to allow you to approach fights in different ways. You could use slings to herd flighty robots into traps, fire two or three arrows simultaneously to start off a fight with maximum effect, or tie them down to give you the chance to target a vulnerable part. On top of all this, as you progress, you gain the ability to bend bigger and badder robots to your will. It's great to see that tough machine that gave you so much trouble fight the others instead of you.
That's good. I hadn't really thought of the weapons of Horizon Zero Dawn as kind of the progression system, but it does work that way a little bit, and it's definitely the biggest set of new verbs that you get.
Yeah, it bears out.
Mm-hmm.
Also, bear bots.
So I can't. There was no bot that was analogous to a bear in that game.
Oh, weird!
Huge miss.
That seems like one of your basic animals.
Yeah, especially for kind of the overall theming and placement of that in North America, Colorado-ish.
Yeah.
Huge miss. Huh.
That's a bummer. Especially if they had little robot cubs for no reason.
No, I want one.
Just so the bigger robot was really protective of the tiny one.
Yep. Yeah. Jala, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, Deus Ex series, especially the new ones. There are so many different ways to sneak that are improved by different upgrades. Want to cloak past people? Super jump onto the roof? Thermal imaging to help sneak? Hack robots to be on your side? Wi-Fi hack cameras and turrets in the way? The world is your oyster. Apparently, there are good combat upgrades, but who doesn't want to sneak? I'm also going to mention Dishonored series as a close second. It's fun blinking around the map.
Yeah, Dishonored makes you into a god.
Yeah, my answer is actually going to be ripped from a couple of listeners. So.
I love the idea that Jonathan just isn't aware that there are guns in Deus Ex.
Wait a minute, what?
Oh, you can fire these? What?
I thought this game is much more subversive than that. Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought he was a pacifist.
And then finally, Ben, what does Evan say?
Evan says, I love Hitman 2016's upgrade system. You earn unlocks by gaining mastery of a level, learning all the nooks and crannies, finding novel ways to kill your targets, and just playing the game in so many different ways. In exchange, the game gives you more and more tools to do even more interesting and crazy things. It does a good job of not overwhelming you with choice at the start, then slowly ramping up the power and the options the more you play and learn the maps.
Yeah. Nice. I need to play more of that. That was a lot of fun to do on Duck Spring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we should probably...
Good. Is that when you axed a bunch of security guards?
Oh, yeah. I spent I spent an hour axing people. We need to take a moment to celebrate, because do you know what we just did?
Is it the 200th multiplayer?
No. What we just did was we got through a fairly lengthy multiplayer about a kind of RPG related topic.
No Dark Souls.
No Dark Souls. There you go.
Oh my god.
Did we succeed? Did our audience fail? I don't know.
But the show can end. we're free. No. I just wanted to.
That was the night I got clean.
Just all of us walking off into the sunset.
I'm ascending into the cloud, you guys. How do you stop this?
Use your grappling hook. He said bitterly.
Like grappling.
we can do ours kind of quick here. I already did mine. Final Fantasy X. I think that is even though I love the job system across 5 and Tactics, I think 10 does a very good job of getting you that hybrid of established characters that you can kind of, again, bend to your whim and make into the fighters that you want for any given situation. Yeah. Jala.
Well, I didn't really have an answer to this question, so I just decided I was just going to piggyback off a bunch of other people. So I'm just going to say some things that I'll just kind of throw out. Yeah, I'll second that. I'll second Final Fantasy X. Final Fantasy Tactics does give you a lot of options, but I don't know yet enough. I haven't played enough in there to be super, super excited about that. It's very customizable though. And then Dishonored, especially Dishonored 2, when I was going through and, you know, picked up all these different new abilities and your rat swarm and shit, I was like, oh my god, this is so awesome! The first time I played with that, that was so fun. So that's very empowering. And then of course, even in the first Dishonored, the first time that you're able to blink, you're like, fuck, this is pretty cool. Oh my god, this is great. I'm gonna kill everybody. Or at least that's me anyway. That was what I said.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what I'll say for mine.
Nice. No disagreements. Ben.
Let the piggybacking continue. I think pretty much most things by Obsidian do a really good job of this. So Alpha Protocol or Knights of the Old Republic, Fallout. I think one I can think of, for example, of Knights of the Old Republic is as a reward for a quest, instead of just getting XP, you'll have one of three weapons you can pick and it'll fit in with the quest theme. They do a good job of making choices like that where,
Nice. And then Dennis, you put this one out, but why did you put this one out?
Yeah, it came to mind because of something I've been playing this week, although I don't think it's my primary example. But I'm going to continue to piggyback. I'll echo Jeffrey, who talked about Fallout. I love that perk system so much because it feels like they started with the flavor and then worked back to like what stats to attach to it. So it's always, there's always something kind of big and flavorful and interesting that's at the heart of it. That's really fun to get. And then, you know, everything else kind of comes out in the wash.
Flavorful is a very fun adjective to apply to something related to a video game.
Especially one as gory as Fallout.
Of course. Yeah. Well, thank you everybody for writing in. If you want to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. And those go up on Tuesday afternoons, thanks to Dennis and Jala, usually.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, since it's been a while since you've been here, I want to ask you what you've been tip-tapping on.
Yeah, so I've been vacationing and flying, which means I've been playing my vacationing and flying game, Danganronpa 2. And I finally beat it.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Wow. Awesome.
The champion returns.
Yeah.
Good job.
This has been, God, probably 2 years in the making at least.
Did you even remember what happened since the last time you set it down?
Oh, holy shit. That was my first mistake. I saved my game, apparently, the last time I played it, right before a class trial. So that's like,
uh-oh.
After the visual novel portion that like tells you everything that happened and sets up all the clues and like lays out the scenario that you've got to puzzle out. And going straight into, then you'd like have to really quickly piece all this together. And so I was completely not prepared. And it was the, I believe, the final murder, actually.
Oh, Jesus. That thing is so intricate.
Yeah, it's ridiculously intricate.
Yeah.
And so puzzling through that was no small ordeal. But I have to say, maybe not as well as the first game, but the second game stuck the landing for me.
Yeah.
I was pleased with the big twists about what was actually going on that it threw at me.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I did not see any of them coming. Mm-hmm. So that was excellent. And I felt like it was all kind of true and paid off everything they'd built to up to that point, which was great. And, you know, some of the fan servicey stuff about like characters from the previous game reappearing and everything like that. Mm-hmm. I just appreciated because I liked the first game.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, like the characters they bring back are amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just like fired on all cylinders for me on that. I will say I hope this isn't too much of a spoiler. In the first game, you escape by catching the bad guy breaking his own rules.
Mm-hmm.
In the second game, you escape by anime, I believe in us bullshit.
Yeah.
You just believe in the future enough and that gets you out.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
I saw what they were doing with it and I liked the idea that like, hey, the bad guy is assuming that it's a binary choice that you have to make, and your ability to like say like, no, we create this future for ourselves. Like, okay, yeah, that's great. It's just literally every anime.
Yeah.
So
if that wasn't hot on the heels of some really stylish stuff, let's say that, I would have been much crankier about it.
Yeah.
I bet if I play this game, I will get really mad and flip a table or possibly throw my Vita if I were to play it.
What would happen if you did that would be you would just like, okay, so you would face roughly northeast and you would get up and then you would start walking. You would punch your way through a wall. And you would keep on punching your way through mountains and streams and other walls and buildings until you got to Cincinnati, where you punched me for even introducing the notion of this game into your life. Based on your reaction to Danganronpa 1, I and also because I don't want to get punched, I really encourage you not to play
ever
it.
Ever touch it.
Yeah.
Well, we did it so you don't have to.
So when are you going to play VLR or finish VLR?
Oh gosh. Yeah. That got to figure that one out as well. It's on one of my, so I've got two memory cards for my Vita, one that's been plugged in. It's like 8 megabytes that or eight whatever gigs that's been in there forever, and then a 4 gig one that's in the pouch, the carry case for the game. VLR is on the pouch one, and it's just I always forget that I have it. So it's technically downloaded and ready to go. It just I need to come back to it. Although I'll be very much in the same place, and even more so with VLR, since there's all like the weird loopy stuff that
you would have to know what to jump back to.
Final thing else. Well, no, two final things about Danganronpa. I love some of the personal level payoffs that they have at the end, that just the way that they handle the individual relationships between the characters is really good, without completely losing itself to the macro plot of what's going on in the world. So that was good focus on their part. Then I was pleasantly surprised that I beat the game and it unlocked a novel of sorts that I'm reading through now, which is Danganronpa If. And did you read that, Cole, or
no? I put that down because I mean it's a very long game and I played it pretty much in a long row. I may end up going back and grabbing it. For as minimally interactive as that game is, the idea of sitting there and just straight up reading on my PS Vita didn't seem that attractive at that point. But it might,
and that's what you're doing. but it's well, I'm like not too far into it, but it's an interesting concept. So they go back and do like a alternate telling of the first game where a big plot point in the first game goes early on, goes very differently. And then you watch how that plays out. You would not enjoy it if you had not played the first game.
Right.
Because it cashes in on you knowing these characters and knowing what happened in the first game to subvert those expectations.
Yeah.
But it's fun to revisit all those characters as well. So I felt like it's a long game, and I've been playing it for 2 years, and I feel like there's this huge bonus present tacked onto the end that I didn't even realize was going to be there. Nice. I've got the Vita Vex to my bed and am motivated to read that through. Nice. I don't even know if that counts as a game. It's literally just text that you read. So
yeah, it's a little.
Video games have come back around.
Take that, Mom.
Yeah.
I'm very happy to hear that you think it stuck the landing, because I was pretty satisfied with it. It's remarkable that it does it because of how big of a bite they take off, that they were able to chew and mostly swallow it successfully.
Yeah. And it fits pretty well with the first game.
Yeah.
I need to go back and like read more in depth how integrated it is, but I think there's a pretty major plot point that they kind of laid the groundwork for in the first game.
Yeah.
In a big way regarding the headmaster.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah. What else? And,
yeah. So, go ahead.
I just want to say, I don't think I would be upset at anybody on this podcast enough to ever actually punch any of you.
Right. Continue. You would just flip all the tables and mess up
punch
my pots and pans.
Us.
Yeah, no. That's the thing. I don't actually think you would be inspired to violence. But what I didn't want to happen was for us talking about it in glowing terms to be read as a recommendation based on the way you've reacted.
Not for Jala.
Yeah.
There's a little asterisk right there.
Yeah,
except like, Jala.
Not super Jala.
Got it.
You've had three at bats, or I've had three at bats in terms of games like this that all of which you have not liked.
Well, I still haven't finished Steins Gate, but I have no problem with that one.
Okay,
there you go.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah. Hey, batting 300 is too bad in baseball. Two other games that I've spent less time with, but have both made good impressions. I should talk hardware. For Father's Day, Jen got me a golden PS4 Slim.
Oh, nice.
Which is badass. So, yeah, that was I gave my PS4 back to David when he was – or my PS, David's PS4 back
right,
to David
right,
when he was visiting, because I've had it on loan from him forever.
Mm-hmm.
He leaves and Jen literally comes down the stairs at the same time holding a box. She's like, I don't want to be without Netflix. Happy early Father's Day.
Oh, that's
that's pretty great.
That's always a fun gift.
Yeah, so that sent me down a nice little binge of all the stuff that I had not gotten to when I had the first PS4. And I kind of asked some people on Slack, and overwhelmingly I heard I should try Tales from the Borderlands, which is a Telltale game. Yeah. So very much in the vein of The Walking Dead, or, you know, pick your game. And I decided that to try to do it co-op, which is this is becoming more of a theme. These non-co-op games like Machinarium, like The Inner World, like Tales from the Borderlands, that I'm actually having a ton of fun doing as a couch co-op game. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is Jen and I just as for fun. Jen holds the controller during the talky bits, and I hold the controller during the shooty bits. Mm-hmm. And it works really well that way. and we played kind of, I would say, just the opening, not even act, like the opening couple of scenes of it. But the humor of the Borderlands universe, I think, was begging for a little bit more narration behind it. Mm-hmm. Or a little bit more direction behind it. Like, when you're in a video game world and all the dialogue and jokes are delivered by Handsome Jack speaking through your earpiece, there's only so much they can do. And that's where you get some of the you know, reservations against the game for being memey or, you know, what have you. But I think that they bring it, that feel of humor, that style of Borderlands humor, to life really well in the Telltale game. And it works excellently when you're kind of playing a movie versus playing a shooter.
Yeah. We get to see like character interaction.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the focus of it. And, you know, it gives them a little bit more room to breathe. So that's gone really well. The game starts after Handsome Jack dies.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. For Borderlands 2, there's like six Borderlands games. Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
He's the big guy.
Although I didn't know that because I didn't play it, but, you know.
Well, now you know.
And I just didn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they kind of veer very hard away from any established characters from the main game. So I don't think I've seen anyone yet that is in the main game, although, like, I've heard, you know, families referenced or Handsome Jack is referenced.
Yeah.
But they're very much kind of doing their own thing in that universe, which I appreciate.
Nice. And you have it all laid out in front of you. You're not, like, waiting for episodes.
Nope, it's the entire thing ready to go. So nice. I'm excited for that. I'm always nervous saving in those games. I don't know, like, when I played The Walking Dead, I think I like kept it up and just turned off the TV because I was afraid, like, if I backed out, it would lose a choice that I had made or anything like that. Like, it wouldn't bring me back in the second to where I was. And the idea of trying to remember what I had chosen and recreate it is terrifying to me. So. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I didn't do that on Tales from the Borderlands. I don't think, you know, yeah. I think it's an unjustified fear, but we'll see. I'm looking forward to playing that more as a co-op game.
Yeah.
And then finally I played Killing Floor 2, which is from the most recent batch of PlayStation Plus games. But there's a whole influx of people both from our community and from all communities, I think, that are trying it out because it's free. It's basically a way, you know, zombie horde mode shooter. Which is awesome.
David talked about a little bit about the first one last week.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Oh, so he played the first one, not the second one.
Right. Right.
Interesting.
Well, we got the basics though, that it is somewhat class based and that it does rely on kind of like a more frequent stream of like specials would be what they mm-hmm. were called from Left 4 Dead.
Yep. That's it. That's exactly right. Is so you've captured the oeuvre of that in, I think this is the second time I've used that word. Jeez.
A little bit.
A trivra, if I use it again. That is very much intact for Killing Floor 2. Mm-hmm. I like the way they did the classes where you kind of, it determines your starting gear, and a couple classes have special things about them. But largely, you can then go in and buy upgrades from any class. And you will earn experience both for your main class and for any class that you have weapons equipped from. So if I'm playing as a demolitionist, which is the class I ultimately gravitated to, but I pick up an SMG from the SWAT class, I will earn points towards the SWAT class. Mm. And I think that's really smart because there is such a momentum towards, because the classes all level up, there's such a momentum towards the first class that you start playing. And it's like, okay, well, I'm now level 5 in this class. I have a special perk unlocked. Like, I'm more powerful, objectively, more powerful as this class than any of the other classes. So I don't want to leave. Like, I've already sunk the time into this. Even if I'm not sure if I like it or not, it is objectively my best class.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of, you know, sticks you in it. The fact that you're now, you know, earning XP and levels for all the other classes just by virtue of using their equipment means you can try out the SMG using your main class. And if you like it, hey, you just earned a couple levels towards that class. So it's fine to hop over and jump into it.
Yeah, that's great.
I thought that was a really, really elegant solution. I would also be curious to know how many people start as the demolitionist. I think it's going to be a higher percentage than usual. So, not the demolitionist, the support, which is where I started before jumping over. The support is the shotgun class, and this is a zombie game. So as you're going down the list, it's the only class that has shotguns. So I think there's a lot of people who have to be going, okay, zombie game, shotgun, I can do that. And then their kind of special ability is they can weld shut doors and rebuild doors faster than other classes. And they act as once around a free like ammo pack for anyone who runs up to them. So, you know, you run out of ammo, run over to a support, take ammo from them, and then you can keep on firing. So I'm sure there's a lot of people who start into this game and go, okay, I have no idea what the hell I'm doing, but I know shotguns are good for zombies and I can close a door with the best of them. So let's go support. quickly kind of branched out and experimented a bit again with the encouragement of the weapons that I was buying randomly and found some stuff that I liked. So, and what I like is making things go boom. So demolitionist is my jam right now. We'll see if that changes again.
Yeah.
Have any of you guys tried it, or is it just David?
Not me.
I think it's just David.
I played I played a little bit of Killing Floor 1 back during the release ARG for Portal 2.
Oh wow.
So yeah, it's been like 6 years.
Was Killing Floor 1 related to the release ARG?
It was part of the like the potato sack bundle where they added all that extra content to it, and you know, they made you think that the more people who played those special games, the quicker it would unlock. It was a good way to, and then like they put those games on sale, so it was a good way to, you know, get a hold of some really cool stuff. I had a lot of fun, but just that kind of perpetual online shooter didn't hold much interest for me then, and doesn't that much now.
Yeah, you know. I wonder, once I'm familiar with all the maps and all the classes, like how long that will take me, one, and then how much it'll kind of lose its shine when I'm not constantly seeing new stuff.
Yeah.
But shout out to Michael Prenn and Jason, who I think may have both responded this week. Yeah, Jason Simmons.
Yeah.
They both kind of sherped me through my first couple of rounds of that game. So
that's cool.
Their help is much appreciated.
Nice. I don't know that I have any other questions about it.
Yeah, and that's everything I've been playing.
It's kind of ridiculous that they gave it away for free, but
pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, there's a big DLC release they announced at E3, so I can understand that. I really, really want to see the economics behind what people who participate in that program are getting, and whether they feel like it paid out or not. Yeah. I'm sure I can find that somewhere, but I'm curious.
I worry that we're only going to see that after the program closes down.
Right. And this is how many people, devs and players, it screwed over.
Right.
Hopefully not. Hopefully it's a good thing. I mean, yeah. Anyway, that's me.
Who wants to go next?
I'll go next since Ben didn't answer.
Yeah, I heard Jolly go, so yeah.
Okay. So I played Zombie Army Trilogy with Sam, Jason, with the same Jason that played with you, Dennis, and
the
Greg.
Busy boy. Yeah.
Yeah. So we played Zombie Army Trilogy together. I don't know what else there is to really say about it. We only played like a couple of missions, I want to say, so far. But Jason has gone through this entire game a bunch, apparently. So, you know, and what's kind of funny is that, like, insofar as the scores were concerned, like, it would start out where I was getting all of, like, I was number one, and I stayed number one for about, like, the first third or the first half. And then after that, you know, Sam and Jason would start getting their combos and stuff. And then, like, I just kind of peter out after a while. I don't know if it's because I, like, lose interest, like the bell curve of my interest in the game goes down or what the deal is. But like, you know, then like I'm not as on top of it as I am when I first start out. When I first start out, I'm like, okay, let's shoot the things. And then at some point I'm just like, okay, I'm done shooting the things now. So I don't know. But yeah, both Sam and Jason are like really good at getting the combo chains up really high to where their points go through the roof. So, you know, like once they started, you know, racking up their points, they'd be at like double what I had or whatever. So,
yeah.
But yeah, so there's another co-op game that I played that's like the big thing I want to talk about, but I'm going to kind of skip past and mention a couple of other things that I've continued playing first, since it'll be just kind of like footnotes. Skydancer, I have continued to play that every day. My current high score is somewhere close to 20,000 points. I have unlocked multiple new characters who have relics to buff scores, etc., in different kinds of ways. And basically, like, you unlock a relic every time you unlock a character, and the way that you unlock, or like, you have a relic in your relic screen that you can only unlock by playing the new character. They don't play differently, but, you know, you just need to switch out basically what skin, you know, for your little PC guy that you're playing. You know, so that way you can get these different relics unlocked, and each one of the relics does something like I said, to buff a score. The one that I've got on currently is Tharbatus's Heaven Wings, which doubles the score when you're airborne. The one I'm currently working on is Hattori's Pegasus Horn, which has a small chance to double your score when you reach 50% of your high score. So like right now, if I made 10,000 points, it has a chance to double my score and make it instantly 20,000, you know, which is, you know, what my current high score is. Mm-hmm. I have not unlocked that yet because like the stipulation is you have to run like, I don't know, 150,000 meters with Hattori at night or something. So like, you know, you have to rack it up over time, playing a long time to get that unlocked. But yeah, there's like other characters and other buffs and stuff that I can unlock as well. So over time, I'll be working on that. But I know that a couple of other listeners have started, you know, have downloaded it and kind of started playing with it. But, you know, they haven't told me what their scores or anything are yet. So I don't know how everybody else is liking the game who is playing it. Let me know. So
this looks fantastic. Like. This is on mobile, I assume.
Yeah, it's on mobile, and it's fun, and it's like, it's a good game to play, like, if you have a few minutes, you know, between things, or, like, for me, I'll play it before bed, and if I don't feel like investing the time in Final Fantasy Tactics to, you know, like, continue on with that game, because those battles and stuff get a little bit more involved, then I'll just sit here and play Skydancer for a little bit, and then go to bed. So, and, it gets to the point where I really do. I zen out as I'm playing it. And then, like, the original anxiousness that I feel, it only really happens when I encounter new stuff. Like, at the point that I'm at in the game, like, they start throwing different challenges at you as you, you know, progress through the game. Like, at first it starts you on these really wide platforms and the jumps are pretty simple, and then it starts throwing these chasms that you have to navigate through as you're falling. It has short falls and long falls, and then the platforms start to get narrower, and then there's rocks on the platforms, and if you hit the rocks then you die, and, you know, like stuff like that. Then at the point that I'm at now, right about where my high score is, they have it where you have to land, and sometimes it's like a really long jump, you know, like a really long fall, and then as soon as you land you have to jump again and then like navigate through a chasm or something right as soon as you've done that. So it's a lot of you know, quick response, very very precise movement, you know, kind of stuff at the point that I'm at right now. So when I start seeing that stuff, I'm like, oh God, here we go. And so I think I kind of psych myself out. So anyway, that's my current struggle in that game. But yeah, it's keeping me interested because it keeps on, you know, adding new challenge to it as I go. So yeah, it's fun. People should play it. It's free. Final Fantasy. Tactics. I played a little bit more, but not a whole lot more. I have a few notes. So I'm finding one thing that I don't like about it, like I really don't like about it, is the fact that, and this is not like a gameplay thing, this is just like a me personally comparing it to stuff I've played, is that everybody other than your main dudes is just a body. All that stuff about, like, you nobles don't care about us. We're just pawns in your game. Yes, you are fucking pawns in my game. You have no voice. I don't care about you.
Aside from the other specials, the other story specific.
Yes. Yeah. Other specials, that's it. Nobody else. Like, Ramza doesn't interact with them. There's, like, no characterization of them whatsoever. I mean, like, granted, it's limited, but in Shining Force, you, in between your battles and stuff, you can go to your headquarters in town and talk to everybody, and the people that join you have specific purposes behind it, and, like, you know, they have different say in the headquarters, and you can develop relationships with them, you know, over time. And I want to say it's a Resurrection of the Dark Dragon remake of that game. And then also in Shining Force 3, you know, they will form bonds with each other on the battlefield and will score critical hits or have other bonuses when they fight alongside the same people all the time. And depending upon what their relationship is and, you know, like what their job, you know, essentially what their job is, you know, they get different types of buffs. So it's weird that for all of the various things you can micromanage and tactics, they didn't pick up on that because Shining Force was around before that. So, like, they could have totally ganked that.
Having no such thing as just like a blank slate character is also something that like Fire Emblem did. And Fire Emblem also had that like social kind of stuff. I think that I think that they wanted to give you the ability to recruit and shape people at will, outside of just the handful that they gave you, you know, by the course of the story, because those characters are also incredibly powerful.
You know what this needs is the engine that they're showing off for Shadow of War, the next Shadow of Mordor game. Like, I think if they can do that kind of dynamic character creation and storytelling in a game like you're describing, that would be ideal. Because then your rando can, like, as they fight alongside you, etc., like you're describing, can start you know, developing traits and form bonds and stories with other people. Like, that would be really cool.
That would be cool. Also, the only other thing is that I came across a Choco and I invited it to my party, and then people in the Slack were like, be careful, you'll have lots and lots of Chocos. And I'm like, you're kidding me. And they're like, no, really. And I go through like one battle and I come back and there's like another one. And then I'm like, what the shit? And then I go away and I'm like in town, and then I go back in there, there's an egg. And I'm like, what the shit? Oh my God, where are they coming from?
Welcome to hell.
And then I thought he was really just fucking with me, but Michael Prenn's like, skin them. And I'm like, what? I like birds and I'm vegan. Why would I ever skin them? And then and then he told me, like, no, you can really skin them in the game. And I'm like, what? Why would you do that? That's terrible. And so I'm morally opposed to this decision. I don't want to do it. So I'm just going to have tons and tons of Chocos until they fill up my screen, and then I'll have to figure out what to do with them.
Those Chocobos, I think they reproduce by budding. Yeah, you don't have to have a pair.
Like, is it asexual reproduction? And they're like, yep. And I'm like, okay.
And it's not just Chocobos. That's the way I believe that any monster that you can recruit ends up working.
Oh boy. Well, anyway, so that was a thing that happened, and it was Boko the Choco that started all of this.
Well, that's a dude who I think you meet in a story mission, right?
He's just like, you're going through to a story mission, and on the way you happen to see a bunch of goblins that have a conversation that's all gob hob 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 gob, and that's like what your conversation is
because they're Pokemon.
Yeah, and then after that, you know, Choco, Boko the Choco is like, wark, wark. And then and then you get to, you know, decide if you want to save him or not. And I'm like, okay.
Well, of course you're going to, because he's Boko the Choco.
Why do they have to bother with the fucking text box?
Because it's funny.
Whatever. It gives me a headache. I'm stupid.
Because it's funny.
I'll just... Okay, so anyway, so those are my notes about the other things I've continued to play. Now I'll talk about the game that I'm currently, like, my new game that I just bought on the Steam sale. Clandestine.
So, I'm excited to hear about this.
It's a single or two-player game. It's a stealth hacking game set in 1996, and I will say it's really meant for co-op, so, like, if you want to get this game, you should have another person to play. It is asymmetrical co-op as well, so that means that the two players have different stuff going on their screen. It's not the same thing. It is by Logic Artists, which is a dev from Denmark that formed in 2011, made up of grad students of a game design program at a university over in Copenhagen. And the first thing they made was Expeditions Conquistador in 2013. Then Clandestine was their second game, which was released in 2015. And then they recently released Expeditions Viking a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And basically those other games are like tactical games, you know, strategy games. So anyway, the two roles that you have to play, that the two people playing this game together can do, there is the spy that has the main game, essentially, and the hacker is basically a bunch of mini games that plays more of a management or advisor role. So, like, the hacker is a dude who wears high-waisted jeans and looks very Euro. He's got, like, you know, a tude. He's Martin. And then the spy is a redheaded chick named Katya who has a fanny pack because it's 96.
Of course. It's where she keeps her pogs.
Yeah.
Do they have tie-dye shirts, too?
Say what?
Do they have tie-dye shirts as well?
No, but she has a flannel around her waist. So anyway, Katya sneaks around. She picks up intel, does lethal and non-lethal takedowns. She can take a gun off of somebody and, you know, can fight. But the enemies, at least in the bit that I've played so far, are tough and combat is difficult. So, you know, the shooting is slow, as is the running. So it's really best not to get caught. And I don't know if those are things that are going to get faster over time or if it's just going to consistently be like that. But from what I've seen from the dev, they basically wanted the combat to be difficult so that it encourages you to, you know, lean more towards the sneaky bits.
Yeah.
So Martin can hack into cameras and computers. He can tag enemies on your screen for you, decode security locks to get you into doors and stuff like that. So that he basically has like a console up that has four different windows where he can monitor what's on the security camera he's taken over at the present. One that has like the network, another one that's just kind of like a chat window with, you know, player one. And then I don't know what the other one is. I guess some kind of overall map. I don't know. Sam's playing that one, so I only got to see like part of the tutorial.
Yeah.
So, just like you do with all, you know, real tech people, assume it's magic.
Yeah, it's just magic. I don't know. He does something over there, and then a thing happens, which it's like so stereotype. I don't even want to. So anyway, the graphics of this game are passable, but it's kind of funky and buggy. And the thing is that here's the thing. The game plays well, but the voice acting is and the graphics, they're all right, but they're just off enough to be really entertaining to me and Sam, because like Sam is the dude who is, you know, abject suffering king. You know, he is like all up in the bad media. So like, and then of course I have a streak of that myself. And so, mm-hmm. We are both completely entertained with this game and the fact that it is a little bit buggy and a little bit janky. I mean, like, it plays fine.
Yeah.
It's just some of the other, you know, visuals and audio stuff were just like,
it's okay. It's like an Uncanny Valley thing almost. Almost, yes. There, but not quite.
Yeah, and so the voice acting has what Sam describes as roaming accents. And it's... Yeah, so it's just pretty off, and it's basically an off-brand European game is the way that Sam described it, and I keep on referencing that just because, like, I like his summation. It's a very apt summation, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
The overall concept, though, is really cool, and it's fun. So, you know, like, we've enjoyed what we've done so far. After the prologue, where they basically teach you how to play the game and get you through, like, your first mission, there's a whole part that has in-engine cutscenes, which are, like I said, kind of buggy. And they're a little bit buggy, but in different ways for either one of us. So, like, I'll be sitting there watching the cutscene, and it will look fine for me on my computer. But then Sam's like, "You're vibrating all over the place." Okay, I don't know. But anyway, after all these cutscenes and stuff, you get to explore the headquarters and see, you know, where you can go to upgrade your weapons, and both players get to run around. So, like, you know, the person who's playing Martin, the hacker guy, can still actually, you know, like, explore and do something other than stare at, like, a screen, you know. only the main character, Katya, can actually initiate the story beats, though, so it keeping that player one is you know, the really the main player, and the other person's just kind of like running interference. But like, it looks to me, just from wandering around the headquarters, as if there's going to be a mission sneaking around in there eventually. It looks like,
you know, it's coming,
but it looks like they're setting that up, because it's really kind of like fairly intricate, and there's some stuff in there that I'm like, that looks like I've got to be here sometime later, you know. Like, there, the place where you can go upgrade your weapons has like a bunch of bookshelves and stuff that there, and there's like some locked doors and things like that, security locked doors where Martin would normally have to hack into. And you know, I'm like, okay, all of these bookshelves and these weird positions are so that way they can put guys, and I'm going to have to take them down. You know, so like, that's what I'm thinking. But anyway, there's a couple of funny things that happened in the mission control area, though. First off, the guy that you talk to upgrade your equipment is some Russian guy. And they make it really, really apparent that he's going to be like a bad guy, because, you know, Katya starts talking to him in Russian, and then he's going off about, I don't know, something or other. I really was not paying attention whatsoever. And so then it like focuses on like this little Russian flag that he's got behind him on like a cabinet or something.
Right.
And it was like, gee, I wonder what that's, you know, what that's going to be later. But anyway, like on his desk, I took a screenshot and I uploaded it to my Twitter and everything, because it was very funny to me. He has like a gun and some, you know, gun cleaning tools and stuff. And then the Encyclopedia of Jewish Genealogy, and then a couple of magazines, Maximum and Narcissist. And that made me, I was like, this is the best ever. Just looking at the backgrounds on this are just great. So anyway, that was just kind of entertaining as hell for me. Because, like, they took the time to put the Encyclopedia of Jewish Genealogy on his desk.
Okay.
And then, like, I don't even know what that's about. And then, like, you know, Maximum and Narcissist magazines.
Yeah, might as well have villain.
Yeah.
And also, there's another part where we unlocked the door and we went down the stairway, and there was a guy that was back there that was just staring at a wall, and you can't interact with him. I don't know what he's doing there. He's just his hand is kind of close to his crotch. I'm like, dude.
Menacing.
He's at the end of his rope.
I don't even know, but I was just like, okay, this is... Yeah. So anyway, I was very entertained by this. Yeah. And Sam is also entertained, and I had an unexpected amount of work from my day job come up lately, so I have not been able to get back in to play more with Sam yet about this, but I'm having a lot of fun with it. It's actually legitimately, the gameplay is fun, and like I said, the jankiness just kind of adds to its charm for us.
I can see that. I really enjoy the idea of a game allowing you to be the voice on the radio that says, I need more time.
I'm almost in.
I'm breaking regulation for you.
Yeah, and it's actually right now on Steam sale is 75% off, so it's like $5. Yeah. So, you know, like, if that's something that sounds interesting to you, having that asymmetrical co-op, then there you go. And also, whoever hosts the game is automatically player one. So keep that in mind, because I was hosting the game because Sam's net connection, as bad as my net connection is, Sam's is worse. And so I was hosting and I was automatically player one. I didn't have a choice. No. So I would imagine that if you tried to play this single player, you'd have to toggle between the two, and that would not be fun to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I don't know for real how it plays, because I didn't play single player mode, but at least during the prologue part, if you are just, you know, trying to learn how to play the game in the tutorial bits, it makes you switch between the two.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like a pain. So yeah, definitely if you have somebody to play this with, play it. Or if you want to play it with somebody, you know, flag me down. I'll be your Martin, since I'm playing Top Chick, Sam.
Yeah. So. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. And is that all?
Yep, that's it.
Okay. Ben, how about you?
I have a teensy question real quick, though. If you play one player, can you play either side?
What do you mean either side?
Like, can you be the hacker or the spy?
If you're playing single player, then you are playing both. Toggle between the two of them.
Yeah.
At least during the intro bit, you were toggling.
Yeah.
So that means that you would have, like, the way that I would imagine it would work is that you have to, you're like, oh, there's a camera, and then you switch over to, you know, what Martin would be doing, and then do like the hacking of the camera and repositioning or whatever, which, like, that doesn't sound as cool to me.
Yeah,
it sounds like it'd be tough.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Not only would it be tough, but it would also be like breaking pacing too much, you know.
Yeah,
like it's a lot more fun to have somebody and interact with that. So yeah, again, like if somebody wants to play this, flag me down or flag Sam down. Sam has it too.
Yeah.
And yeah, we can play the game with you. It's fun.
Clandestine.
Yeah.
All right. So as a segue, I've also had a co-op game that I played this last week. I picked up Ultimate Chicken Horse. I can't remember if I mentioned this game on the podcast or not.
No, I saw you playing it though.
Okay, so it's a group party game sort of thing. The way it works is everybody is an animal. It's a platformer game. Everybody is in a starting area. They need to get to an end area. The way they do that is they just platform over. So you got to jump on some stuff and jump over. Okay. So if everybody completes the level without dying, great. Nobody gets any points. If you get to the end of the level and somebody else dies and doesn't make it to the end of the level, you get points and they do not. And if you are the only person get the end of the level, then you get a lot of points and nobody else gets any points. Why might you not get to the end of the level? Well, in between each round of going from start to finish, they give you a bunch of random items, and you get to pick one of these random items. It could be a set of stairs. It could be another platform to help make it easier to get to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be a crossbow that just fires arrows, a stream of arrows at some point in the level. Or it could be a hockey puck generator that just constantly knocks hockey pucks in a line across the level. So you can make it much harder to get to the end point. But the catch is you're still playing in the level like everyone else is. so whatever obstacle or obstacle around getter you put down on the map, everybody has the opportunity to get that. And so if you're the first person to complete the level, you get a little bit of bonus. So it encourages you to try and go for it, but other people might kind of stay back and kind of see what works and what doesn't work and then try and pick a path from that. And so you play a number of consecutive rounds and there's a certain point threshold. So once one person passes it, then they win the entire round.
Huh.
So kind of a simple concept. It's like, it's also on a Steam sale right now. So I think it's like $8 or $9 right now.
Yeah. It's 40% off.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. There's some buggy issues with it, but it's definitely a really fun party game. One of my friends already had the game, so I was able to play it with him.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a lot of fun playing it. We want to try and get a couple more people to play it as well. They have a nice kind of like upgrade system where the more you play it, the more levels it unlocks. I'm not sure if it unlocks additional items or not as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was pretty enjoyable. It's a good like Friday night party sort of game. Yeah.
This looks and sounds amazing. I kind of thought by the title it would be like a lull random I didn't know what to expect. It didn't interest me. But like what you're describing is a platformer mixed with like Rampart and The Incredible Machine.
It gets pretty fun at points because they do have a nice balancing with the items, where some of the item, like they'll give you a bunch of items that will like make the level impossible. And then based on like whether or not people finish, they'll start. Some of the items will be like bombs or dynamite or a nuclear bomb. Yeah. And what those do is you set it in a certain area and it blows up all the things that have been put there. So you can basically undo certain things that make the game the level impossible. So to try and make it possible again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the levels get a little bit more complex too. I think I've only played three of the levels, but the third one that I played is like a spooky house level or something like that. But there's a switch at one part that will call an elevator to come down and then go back up. So that's one way that you can try and get to the top, or you can just try and platform your way up to the top. But then there's like they start putting like kind of danger elements throughout the level. Like there's brambles that'll kill you if you touch them, or there's like broken glass that'll kill you if you touch it. So there's like built-in obstacles to begin with. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
The art in this game is ridiculous. I like it.
Yeah.
Whenever you get to the finish, your character just dances. So that's a pretty satisfying conclusion if you get to the end.
That's about right.
Yeah. Well, I love the animation style too. It's like that low frame rate, but it also has like a little bit of wiggle to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess that's one of the other incentives to like rushing really quickly at the beginning is all the traps kind of will start to ramp up, but then they're a lot harder to pass once they're like have already ramped up. I guess it's just kind of like a subtle thing. Like, so when you start the level, like the crossbow thing, that'll start firing arrows. So you might have a path you can get through very quickly if you like rush it at the beginning that will soon just be arrows that fly by. That'll be really hard to get through.
Yeah.
One of the other charming things about it too is even after you die, things will still hit your bodies. So arrows will continue to hit your bodies and your body will interact with it. You know, it'll still be knocked over and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of, and even if you're dead, it's somewhat enjoyable to watch what happens to your body in the remaining time.
I imagine how it is in the real world too.
Yeah, it's probably like ghosts, like with Swayze.
Yeah.
So this was definitely fun. I had a good time with it. Again, it's definitely a game you want to play with friends. Like you can play with random people, and that can be fun too. But it's definitely a lot more fun if you're talking to the people that you're playing with. So, all right. So outside of that. I got usual stuff. I got Rocket League. I got Friday the 13th. Those are still both fun. Cole will have to play Friday the 13th.
Yeah, we will.
That'll be a lot of fun. I also picked up a game on the Steam sale called Line. It's like a small puzzle game. I think those are the ones that I'm kind of ticking off first before I pull the trigger on anything big. Mm-hmm. It's like a small, like tiny, like pathfinding game where it's like it'll give you a grid, a start point and end point of shapes, and you have to draw a path between the two, and it's kind of like a lattice in between it, and there's like the catch is that lines can't cross one another, but there's like hubs where lines can enter that and exit in different directions as a way so that they can kind of cross without having to run into one another. It's just a weird abstract puzzle game, but it's pretty fun. It's spelled
Line?
L-Y-N-E.
Okay.
It's stylized to be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a fun tiny game. So if you're into abstract puzzles that are tiny and small, that's worth under $1. So, all right. And then another thing that I got, I've been playing Magic, but I'm not going to talk a whole lot about that, but that's been fun. We did a work draft recently. I don't know how much I can say about that, I guess.
And then, are they holding you to secrecy?
Well, I don't know. I don't know like how much depth I can go into, or like, I don't know. We drafted like a master set, which are like cards that are like, it's kind of like the best of X number of sets that they have. So it's kind of like it's cards from a bunch of different sets, but they try and like curate them so that they kind of have similar themes, or you might be able to build some synergies with them. And so we're doing like a tournament at work. So everyone drafted it, and then we're going to do a 3-round tournament, and everyone played the first round, I think yesterday. So I was able to win the first one 2-0, which I was really happy about. But so it's like I have a blue-black deck, blue-black-white, but it's a flyers, and it's a lot of high-cost cards and a lot of low-cost cards that are like high in defense to try and make it to the end game. Because basically with Magic, there's like there's a lot of quick decks, like red decks are like the really aggressive, really quick decks, where they just try and kill you in like 4 or 5 rounds by just putting out creatures that can like attack instantly and just try and get your 20 life down. Whereas like blue's a lot of a slower control deck where it'll do things like counter spells to stop you from doing something, or it'll be like defensive, where it'll be like creatures who are like high defense and a small attack, so they can just withstand people and just wait a while. But then they have much better end game cards, and so they can easily win if you make it to the end game, because they can play these really powerful cards then that'll just like totally nullify all these creatures that red might have put down in the first few rounds. So that's like one of the balances. And so I'm playing like a more long-term deck with things like I have a 3-mana cost wall that has a defense of 7. Again, I don't know how much depth to go into because I don't know if that lands at all, but
I'm sure there's somebody out there who fully understands it. Like well, what I'm interested in hearing about is like the compromises that you make when you're facing up against somebody else with a different kind of deck, you know?
Yeah. So basically what I was doing is just trying to go for value cards with this draft. So basically not trying to focus on any synergies, because there weren't a lot of strong synergies in this deck in particular. So it was basically just trying to say, like, when I get the cards that I'm drafting, just look at it and figure out which card is the absolute best one, pick that one, and then go for that. And so originally I was just doing blue and black when I was drafting, but I got a couple of nice white cards, so I tried to do a splash of that. And so doing 3 color. So typically, yeah, I guess different people do different things. Some people just do like mono red or a single color if they get good enough cards in that. Some people do 5 colors, so it's kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
I think a lot of mine was just trying to get card efficiency. So I have a lot of low cost blue and black cards that are like maybe 1 or 2 mana that are like pretty good wreckers. There's one where you put it down, it's an enchantment where anytime another creature dies, you gain a life and they lose a life. And then I have a 2 cost card where it gives all my creatures +1/+1, so +1 to attack and +1 to defense, and it gives all of their creatures -1/-1 just for that turn. I was able to get those cards out both times, both games that I played, and it worked really well against a red deck, because usually red decks are really small creatures that have a high attack but a low defense. And so by playing the one where it gives all of them -1/-1, me +1/+1, able to like almost clear their board. And then on top of that, have like me gain life and then lose life because of the enchantment that I have out.
Oh gosh. So, rich get richer.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Again, I don't want to talk too much about this. This could be a very, insular topic, I guess, yeah. But, all right. But I have one last
thing. Now I know what it sounds like when I talk about Hearthstone. I understand.
I'm sorry, dude. I'm sorry.
No, it's good. It's all good. I love it.
All right. So the one last thing I have to talk about is a game that I didn't play, but I watched somebody play for like an hour or two. So we're getting more and more removed from playing games. but it's Dead Cells. Oh, and yeah. In particular, the person I saw watch it is Jonathan Blow, the guy who made The Witness. Mm-hmm. He streamed with Casey Muratari, which is another guy who was a developer on The Witness, who's also doing a side project called Handmade Hero, where he's like programming a game from scratch and he's videotaping him doing it. They had a session where they just streamed them playing the game and talking about it. And so really interesting stream just to hear two game developers talk about games and like what they liked and disliked about it. But then it's like a 6-hour stream of them doing it. So it's kind of fun just to be like voyeuristic and just see like two game developers like hanging out on the weekend and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
The game they were playing is called Dead Cells. It's a roguelike game. It's kind of in the same vein as Dark Souls, but I haven't played enough Dark Souls to know if that's an apt comparison or not.
It's more of like an aesthetic comparison, honestly, okay. I think.
Yeah, I could see that. You start out in a prison, so it's kind of similar. But the way it works is, since it's a roguelike, you go through a level, you have a single health bar, it'll refill at the beginning of each level that you play. If you ever die, you're back at the beginning, and you kind of get a penalty to the two types of economies that you have. Like, your gold will get taken away, and then the other thing that you collect, which I forget what it is, it's like a blue orb or whatever, those will get taken away as well. I think you can keep some of them, but that's what you use to pay to buy items and also pay to upgrade your stats on things. And so the way the game works is it's procedurally generated. So the levels are just like randomly generated. The weapons that you pick up are randomly generated as well. So like you have, it's kind of like FTL where you'll go on a run and be like, oh, I have a really good weapon set this round, so I'll probably be able to make it farther if I do this. At the end of each level, there's where you can reinvest in like the skills that you already have to like upgrade the weapons that you get. And like, So you're starting, you can buff like your, the starting weapons you get, you can like buff how well you work with certain weapons. Mm-hmm. And the way the inventory works is you have like two main weapons. They can either be a ranged weapon, like a crossbow. They could be a sword. There's like a whip, that's kind of like an in between. Mm-hmm. You could also put a shield there for like defense. So there's like a couple different class types like that. And those weapons will also have a level as well. So in the earlier levels, it'll be like lower leveled, like one or two. And then in later levels, they start getting like 3, 4, 5 or whatever, which they'll like do more damage. It's a typical game convention. And then at the end of each level two, there's also like a boss battle that you have to do. And it'll typically be pretty difficult. And it's high likelihood that you'll die, especially if you get kind of like bad random rolls and don't mm-hmm. have a good loadout.
Yeah, yeah, it's like an FTL or a Rogue Legacy kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, it looks pretty cool. The fighting system looks pretty interesting. It's a lot of like you can roll or jump or just like throw traps at the enemy, I guess. So in addition to the two slots that you have for these main weapons, there's also two slots for these like secondary weapons that you can get. And those might be something like there's ice grenade that'll freeze enemies. There's a trap where if a person runs across it, it'll hold them there for a few seconds. So there's like kind of alternative types of weapons like that. Mm-hmm. And then you have like one sort of like amulet or jewelry spot, which is it will be some sort of like randomized perk where it's like, I don't know, maybe arrows do twice as much damage or you get more gold from killing people or something like that. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. Interesting game. Art style looks pretty cool. Yeah. Combat system looks pretty interesting.
Did it look cool enough for you to think, hey, I'm going to go get this?
I'm on the fence because this is typically not the type of game that I would play. I don't think I haven't played a whole lot of roguelikes before, but this might be the one that I take the plunge on maybe. But we'll see. So
yeah,
definitely looks cool. Yeah.
The FTL comparison sounds like it would kind of be a little bit your jam.
Oh yeah. I absolutely love FTL. I think the main difference between this game and that is there's not a pause button on this game in terms of like, when you're fighting, you can't really like stop and like plan out and like look at like how quick everything's loading and make these decisions or whatever. It's very much like you have to be really good at the fighting game aspect of it, which is probably the part that's the most difficulty for me. So
yeah,
but still looks cool. Nice. Yeah.
Awesome.
That's all I got.
Okay. Well, everybody who thinks, hey, maybe it's a little bit too late, might be happy. I haven't been playing anything. I have been playing a shitload, but it's been Dark Souls 2 and Metal Gear Solid 2. I'm like looking longingly at the green pastures of like August when I will only have like 3 assignment games going on at once. So a little bit overburdened right now.
There's just meaty games.
What's that?
Those are some meaty games.
Yeah, they are. I'm going to go finish Metal Gear Solid 2 tonight, actually, because if I don't, what's it all for? No, I just need to get it off my plate. No, so we can finish it up if everybody is okay with us buttoning it.
Button it up.
Go to buttons.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 202. We really appreciate you stopping and making the time. If you're listening to this, I know we've talked it to death, but this comes out the day before we make the big Patreon changeover, which is a really big deal. We've been working on it. I know specifically, like, with the changes to early release, let me look here. Like, this is a one-time embarrassment of riches, but with the way that that's going to work out on Monday, we're looking at releasing on Saturday. There are going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There are going to be 7 episodes dropping.
Ooh.
On the early release. Yeah. As everything like notches and gets on that schedule. So, that'll be a big celebratory day. Too bad it's a Saturday. Cause then everybody's going to be like doing summertime holiday stuff, but oh,
could be
well.
Doing summertime driving and have all the time in the world to listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
I listen to a lot of my podcasts on Saturday actually.
Oh yeah. Nice. Well, everybody will have, let's put it this way. It will drop just in time for you to go travel for your, July 4th stuff. If you are in America, I guess everybody has a July 4th. It depends on how special it is for where you're at. Yeah.
I'm in America and I don't ever do anything for the 4th. So
yeah, I never do anything on the 4th. I like going and seeing family around it though.
Yeah. I'm already where my family is, so yeah. I'm okay.
You're still traveling. You're still getting out of bed and going to walk and say hi.
There you go. Yeah. But I don't know how much by way of podcast I can get in there.
Yeah. Cool. Well, but that is at patreon.com/duckfeedtv, and we really appreciate everybody who can go take a look and see. And also, you know, ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts and coming back next week. All of those are appreciated. Am I forgetting anything big?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
All right. Well, I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I'm Jalachan in places.
Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, what do you got?
Guys, we had a really calm episode.
Very sedate.
It was. Yeah. I only have like two things.
Yeah.
That's it.
Go for it. What do you got?
Baguette with a big heart.
Okay, I also have that.
And perk permutation. That was a thing that Ben said.
That's pretty good. Dennis.
I've got Trivra, but otherwise it was slacking.
Okay. Ben?
I got cideries. I don't know if that made it on the episode or not. I got Paul Pro Tip. I got no. I got no Dark Souls, which nobody said that, but. And then I also got Not Safe for Jala, NSFJ.
Pretty good. That got a pretty big laugh.
Oh, I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
How do you stylize it? Just NSFJ or?
Just all capitalized.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. Like, not safe for work, not safe for Jala.
Okay. I've got, I also have Baguette with a Big Heart, and I also have They're Both Intoxicating.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was, that didn't get a huge reaction, but I thought it was very, very aptly put on Ben's part. By the laughs, I think NSFJ should go.
I'm down with that.
Yeah.
There it goes.
Any objections?
Nope.
Can I go play Metal Gear Solid 2?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yep. No, go to bed, Cole.
I know I need to go to bed, but if I don't beat this tonight, I'm going to have to stay up extra late tomorrow.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go to bed either. What am I talking about? I got other things I'll do now.
Yeah.
Likewise.
All right. Well, take care, everybody.
Bye, Zodiacs.
Bye.
So you guys have a good weekend. See you. Mm-hmm.